and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I'm Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are recapping House of the Dragon season 2, just kind of giving our overall thoughts and wrapping it up on a nice little bow, though it's not going to be the end of House of the Dragon content here on the podcast. But we also will be doing on the Patreon Monday, we're going to be recording a outline for what we think will be the rest of season 3 and 4, which will be really exciting. I know there's been some people commenting waiting for that. We just wanted to take our time and get it done right. So we'll be recording that this coming Monday. And then as well as maybe a little bit of rehashing through the House of the Dragon iceberg. Now that we have some confirmations of stuff that was lower on the iceberg and new theories as well. So
I know there will be some things that have moved up. They were in the deepest of depths. But now they are no longer on the crazy tinfoil hat theory stage. They have moved up. So, yeah, so we'll be doing that. And then we will be getting back into the reread, seeing how much more headway we can make on A Storm of Swords. But, woo, Jimmy, whirlwind here.
A lot of news.
We normally record on Thursdays. We didn't do it last week. I think we had some scheduling things. And then we were going to record on Sunday. And then Jimmy's power went out, or Monday.
For no reason.
Just went out, right? So,
Matt, I got to say this real quick before we move on. This is one of those injustices, and I don't have anyone to complain to, so I have to complain to all of you listeners. So feel free to skip ahead about a minute. But okay, so the transformer blew up apparently in my neighborhood. You know what the transformer is?
It's more than meets the eye.
It's oh, Michael Bay. It's in my front yard, and I get a text from my neighbor. Because I'm grocery shopping, about to come home, and I get a text from my neighbor and say, "Hey, they're hacking down your tree to get to the transformer." And I'm like, "What? Why?" And they're like, "Power's out." So I come home and I'm like, "Okay, the power's out, dude." They chopped down like half my tree and they didn't haul it away; they just left it in my yard. And I'm like, "Oh, that's BS, dude." And now I'm like, I'm trying to find someone to haul it away, and people are like wanting hundreds of dollars. And I'm like, "Why? I didn't do this. It's not my fault."
How big is the tree?
It's fairly big. It's a smaller pine tree. Yeah, but like I still have to take it somewhere. I don't know where to take it, you know. But it's just like I didn't cut it down.
Firewood.
I'm about to make a bonfire in the front and burn pamphlets from the electric company. I'm so mad. Like it's not, and it looks like shit. It looks terrible. Yeah. And I'm like, none of this was my fault. It's I don't know.
Your tree, your fault, man.
These are the little injustices that add up in life that give us heart attacks at 50.
I know.
Yeah, it's coming. I'm sorry, dude. That's, the big one's coming.
Did it do any damage to your house?
No, my yard looks like trash now. Right. You know, I had to move some stuff around and whatever, but I don't know. It's just like stupid, you know. And they didn't even leave a note like, "Hey, sorry." They just did it. So
wow. They didn't try to reach out to you or call you or anything?
No, and of course it was the 45 minutes I wasn't home that day. Like it could have been any other time, you know.
Wow, dude. I'm sorry. That sucks, man. I know. We just had some electrical work. That's what it was. We were having like electrical work done.
Yeah, you had your electrical work done, and then mine.
Yeah, I was trying to think of like why didn't we record? Oh yeah, you know. Now that I have a baby, it's like I used to be able to remember. Like, oh yeah, last Tuesday I did this at this time. Now it's like I don't remember.
It's all blurred.
I don't know. Like, I don't even know what I did yesterday. I'm like, what did I do? I can't remember. Could be that I'm just getting old too. So there's always that. But anyway, hey, we're here today. We got to talk about it. Season 2. Some mixed feelings about this season. You go and look at the IMDb ratings. You know, Jimmy, we were talking about this. This has the highest rated episode of all of House of the Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
And the two lowest rated episodes of all of House of the Dragon. So we'll get into that. There is a little bit of news. I thought maybe we'd start with some of the news. Brian Condell and the team, there was a lot of stuff that they were asked about and they were talking about, you know, like they talked a lot about just the season, what it was. We did get a little confirmation that seems like Warner Brothers did have a little interference there. No longer Warner Bros. Warner broke.
Yeah, it's funny because I don't know if there's any other A Song of Ice and Fire / Game of Thrones podcast that talks about the network as much as we do. Because, you know, you're on the board, you know, you're a shareholder.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. You sold?
No. Yeah, dude, I'm out.
You sold?
I'm out. No. It's not worth it.
Oh, no. We don't have inside man anymore.
We don't have an no longer an inside. But technically, I did actually still sell at a profit though. So thankfully.
Well, hey, diamond hands or get the bag, whichever one you want to do. Yeah. But the thing is we talk about the network a decent amount because we try to look at the grand scheme of what the company's doing, because these are the people who are in charge of the visual aspects, right? The visual medium of Game of Thrones / House of Dragon, Westeros, whatever. And we look at the trends, we look at what they're thinking, what they're doing, where their budget is, their profits, because all that impacts the things that we see. And if you need confirmation of this, it seems, now it's about as confirmed as I think it ever would be, but it seems like the scripts were done being written for House of the Dragon season 2. And remember, George kind of talked about this with Ryan Condell, and he said that they decided to cut a battle and put in the season 3. Well, happened to be a resources issue. So whenever they wrote season 2, it was written to be 10 episodes long. And then it comes into March, and I believe they started shooting, and they said, oh no, Warner Brothers comes in and says, no, you have 8 episodes now. Most likely, they probably didn't give him a number of episodes, but they probably gave him a budget cut is probably what happened. And then they looked at the money divided about the episodes and said, okay, well, we're going to have to cut the last 2 things and put that into season 3. They made some rewrites and whatever. That's huge. And when we look at this season, one of the big things that people have said is that great episode, not a good finale. You know, that is the general consensus I've seen online, even from people who enjoyed it. Because I actually really like the episode, and I don't even really necessarily mind it as a finale. But when you look at it in that context, it does feel like an episode 8 of a 10 episode season, doesn't it? It sets up that.
If this had been, if we had gotten a big battle that had taken place after this, and of course, now we have to wait to see what the first 2 episodes of House of the Dragon season 3 look like. Mm-hmm. But if we had gotten a big battle equivalent to even say something like episode 4 after this episode, everyone would have been like, oh my God, this episode would be probably the second. It'd be right up there with episode 4.
Yeah, I think it would at least be like an 8 out of 10, because people would be knowing that the penultimate episode, right, and the episode 9 would be the big battle, and then you have the thought and 10 to set up the third season. After you hear that story, though, and you look at it, you said, man, this is an episode 8, isn't it? It's an episode 8 of 10 instead of episode 8 of 8. And I think that makes a lot of sense. But this is one of the reasons why we do talk about Warner Brothers and what they're doing with HBO. You literally have to if you care to try to get an idea of where this thing is going. So Warner Brothers came in and did a budget cut on their best show. And I don't mean that from like a subjective, I mean numbers wise. It's literally Warner Brothers' number one property.
Max had its single best day ever, was the season 2 premiere of House of the Dragon.
And they decided, listen, I love HBO, obviously. We both do. Warner Brothers, not as confident.
No, and pretty much, pretty much everything outside of HBO, in all honesty, with Warner Brothers kind of sucks. Or it's been bad for a long time, or they're axing it. And I think at first, I will say this, we talked about it. I was excited when AT&T was selling it to Discovery, because at least there you're getting a content creation company coming in to sort of, it wasn't like a total just buying. It was really kind of a merging, blending. And in order to do that, though, they took on a very large portion of AT&T's debt, because their idea was everyone's going to be using their phones to stream things. We should have our own streaming platform. I actually think, legitimately, that's not a terrible idea. So they sold it and sort of merged with Discovery. Now it's Warner Brothers Discovery. And there's been talks that somebody else, they might merge with Paramount or NBC, you know, which is Comcast, you know, Universal, or that somebody might step in and buy it.
And this is literally me and Matt just speculating, by the way, but me and Matt were talking earlier.
I think Amazon should buy it, because
I think they might.
I think they might too, because they've been trying to, I mean, they've been talking about splitting the company up again into 2 separate things. One that is like network television and the other that is streaming, which to me is like, and all the memes are like, well, they were 2 companies. There was Warner Brothers and Discovery, right? And they don't even manage things well. I think we talked about, I can't remember, it was Patreon or whatever. You and I talked about this, and we said, hey, you know, like, why are there not episodes at the end of The Sopranos? If on Max is like the Food Network, like Food from The Sopranos, booed from Game of Thrones. Like, they don't even know how to synergize their own stuff together, let alone, you know, they're cutting all these things. They canceled a lot of DC movies. They've canceled a lot of animated stuff, which is why for a long time I was still under the impression that it's like, I don't know that George's animated movies are going to get done.
Seems like they want to move ahead with them. But my biggest issue is, if you're going to greenlight something and then you're going to let them write out the season, what do you think the outcome is going to be by you coming in and cutting the budget or the episode count, you know, 3 months into filming? That's just a really dumb, that's never going to work, especially for your number one property. Now, what I will say is, knowing the challenges that they went through in season two, or not knowing them, I'm still very happy with season two, House of the Dragon. I really liked it. I thought it had a lot of really great character stuff, character development. I know there's some people who are very upset with some of the character stuff. I'm not one of them. For my own experience, I had, you know, go back and listen. Me and Matt, every episode come on, and yes, we were excited, but we also had criticisms and cons.
We'll talk about that in our big review today as well. We'll do the positives and the negatives of it.
Yeah.
Things we didn't like, because there were things we didn't like. We said them over the season.
Yes. And, you know, and a lot of the times me and Matt were saying, let's see where this goes. And we're still saying that with a lot of stuff, because so many things are going to come back in season three that are going to call back to this season and then the season before that. And, you know, I try to think of it as a whole story rather than just each season being its own story. So even with Warner Brothers being a bunch of dunces, I think that it was overall a pretty successful thing. Hopefully Warner Brothers does not step in and make any more cuts for season three. Or this makes Dunkin' Egg very interesting, though, right? Because Dunkin' Egg is so much smaller of a budget. CGI is going to be, I mean, millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars cheaper. Also smaller cast, I think, for the most part, at least for main roles. And certainly zero mainstream actors, which is pretty general, right? That's kind of how Westeros goes. So be interesting to see how Dunkin' Egg shakes out compared to House of the Dragon when it comes to not just fan reception but also budgeting. I'd love to see the numbers.
Yeah, I mean, my guess is we don't know how many episodes Dunkin' Egg is, do we?
I think he said it would be a shorter season. I'm guessing it's going to be six episodes.
Six. That's where I'm at too. Yeah.
But they can shoot that show every year.
Oh, easily.
Yeah. Even though they'll probably offset it with House of the Dragon. So I think they're going to be on a year and a half cycle for each of them, roughly.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you could easily do it. So,
yeah.
Okay. Let's continue on with some of the news here. So Ryan Condell has asked a bunch of questions, right? And one of those was, he said, let me get it pulled up over here. He says that, talking about Daenerys being the prince that was promised. Right. Or the princess that was promised. He says, remember that Game of Thrones, Song of Ice and Fire, House of the Dragon, in many ways are warnings about the perils of power and people in power and absolute power. And the reason there was no Jon Snow was the connectivity for us is specifically in and around the dragons, the connectiveness between this family and the family to come. We know who Daenerys is watching that image, but Daemon has no idea. That could be his future daughter with Rhaenyra. So for that reason, I think it was important that it was Daenerys in the image. We are not trying to make any kind of specific interpretation of a prophecy that has yet to be revealed by the author. That is George's space to tell the story. So, yes. So I guess some people were saying, like, oh, why wasn't it Daenerys that was the one who was shown?
Or more obvious that was her, right? As fan watchers, you know, the context from the person watching the thing, we're thinking, oh, that's definitely Daenerys. But to Daemon, good point, Ryan Condell, from his perspective, he has no idea who Daenerys is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm with it. And there's some Kit Harington stuff we'll get to here in a second, but we'll keep talking about this. Yeah. So I didn't really have, I'd had no issue with him seeing Daenerys, but I guess to me, it did. There were a lot of people immediately saying, oh, that confirms she's the princess that was promised. But he saw a bunch of other things too. He saw Blood Raven. He saw, you know, him falling in a lake. Right. So there's nothing that it specifically, he was seeing a future events. He wasn't specifically seeing things that are tied to, you know, that are tied to like big prophecies about the White Walkers.
Yeah. And the big debate in the book community has always been, is it John or is it Danny who would be Azor Ahai? And depending on who you talk to, I mean, anybody that's in either camp are very, very dogmatic. about me personally, I think it'd probably be left up to a bit of interpretation. It's kind of like Maggie the Frog. Like, did she actually prophesy Cersei's life, or did Cersei make it happen? Like, are we even fitting it to her because we're the readers and we know about it? Like, it's a really weird thing, and I like it. I like that it's a bit more nebulous than just saying, yep, this is him, it's confirmed. Like, I'd rather have it be up for interpretation. That's what makes this series so fun to reread and discuss. However, there are times when people kind of get dug in with their heels in, and they do not like if you disagree with them, which is always fun. But I think that this is pretty cool, Ryan Condell. I like the fact that he says that's George's space to tell it. And I think what he's kind of alluding to here is that the prince who was promised most likely wasn't answered in the television show of Game of Thrones.
No, it was not.
And he is not going to answer it either. And he is saying that prophecy specifically is going to be one that you see in the book space, where George, if he were to ever finish it, which is kind of cool. Azor Ahai, I don't even think is ever even mentioned in the television show, if I remember correctly.
I don't believe the name Azor Ahai is ever mentioned, but they do. Yeah. They do say like boredom is salt and smoke, and there are other things, but I don't actually. They do, obviously they do say Lightbringer, but I don't believe they ever say Azor Ahai.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, some other news here. Let me pull this back up. And you know, Twitter does this weird thing now where you click on something and it puts it to the right side. So sorry for people who are actually watching this. It's kind of annoying because now I'm like over here with what I want to show you. But Kit Harington was asked a couple things. One about like he talking about like watching House of the Dragon, and he had said, you know, no, it's just like too close for me. I spent so much time there. He wasn't saying he dislikes the show or anything, but sort of was asked. And so he, some of the other things, he talked about season 8 and then the snow show. And so here he is talking about season 8, saying, I think if there was any fault with the end of Thrones is that we were all so effing tired. We could have gone on longer. And I understand some people thought it was rushed, and I might agree with them, but I'm not sure there was any alternative. I look at the picture of me in that final season and I look exhausted. I look spent. I didn't have another season in me. Everyone is entitled to their opinion. I think there were mistakes made story-wise towards the end, maybe. I think there were some interesting choices that didn't quite work.
Yeah. This is maybe the biggest omission of all. Right? Except for season 8 actors, you know, we heard other comments and stuff, but this might be the most clear-cut one of being like, from one of the major figureheads in the show, and being like, yeah, you know, we didn't land it all. But I think that he brings up a good point. And I know so many people are like, we don't care. You get paid millions of dollars. I actually do understand that piece of it. Like, we don't care if you're tired, go out there and act. But like, there is,
he was dealing with alcoholism.
Yeah. There. Well, not just him though. Think about the costumers and the people who work on set. I don't know if you watched the documentary, but them being out there, you know, for 3 months, and then the rest of the shoot taking another 4 months, they were away from their families for like 7 out of 12 months. Now,
I mean, that's part of the gig.
Obviously. It is part of the gig. So I'm not excusing it, but all I'm saying is that, you know, I'm one of those people who said, you know, HBO said, hey, do you want 10 seasons? And they said, no. And then I looked at George R. Martin. He said, I need 13 to tell the story I want to tell. And HBO basically gave him a blank check, and Dan and Dave walked away. And we were very upset by that. I still am. However, maybe it wasn't just Dan and Dave wanting to only do Star Wars. Maybe they were looking at the people that they never ended up doing,
by the way.
Yeah, right. But they looked around at the people that they care about, and I'm sure they have great relationships with, and are like, these people are tired. Like, we can't keep going. We cannot. So I don't know. It adds a little bit more of a human element to it. It doesn't excuse the way it's done, because I still think that if you're good enough at your job, you can figure out a way to do it with the timeline that you were given. And also, they, I believe, agreed to that 8-season thing and set that out way before all this burnout set in. So it doesn't really excuse much of it. But I don't know. Interesting to see that Kit Harington was willing to say, you know, we were tired. Some of the stuff did not land. It sucks, but like, it is what it is, kind of thing. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I mean, we've obviously talked a lot about season 8 on this podcast. I mean, just to see him sort of, admit and say, yeah, you know, some of it was rushed. He was asked about snow as well, which is kind of, also, by the way, he did actually just do something for Game of Thrones. There's like some Game of Thrones mobile game or something.
Oh, it's a new puzzle game.
It's just because he's in the commercial, and it's like, okay. You know, so I mean, like, he did film something new for Game of Thrones. He has some show on HBO that's getting, it just got really good reviews. Industry or something, I think it's called.
Oh, is he part of that? I keep hearing about it. I hear it's really good.
Yeah. And I, because I, they said,
is he in it, or did he write it, or what?
No, he's in it.
Oh, awesome.
I don't know anything about it, but
it's on my watch list. So
it's apparently really good and it's getting good reviews, and he's part of it. So because like the Game of Thrones Twitter retweeted it and was like, hey, go check it out, because it's obviously another HBO show.
Cool.
So, okay, one other thing here, and this is actually him talking a little bit about Snow. So he says, what I can tell you is what is that HBO came to me and said, would you consider this? My first reaction was no. And then I thought there could be an interesting and important story about the soldier after the war. I felt there might be something left to say and a story left to tell in a pretty limited way. We spent a couple of years back and forth developing, and it just didn't, nothing got us excited enough. In the end, I kind of backed out and said, I think if we push this any further and keep developing, it could end up with something that's not good. And that's the last thing we all want. Now, I will say this is interesting, because the way George has talked about this and the way other people have talked about this made it seem like it was Kit Harington's idea. That's sort of been the language that has been presented about this show since it was rumored, speculated about, was that Kit Harington was the one pushing for it and writing it, which he does say here. But even like George's blog post made it seem like Kit was the one who was working on it. And then remember, like Amelia Clark was actually the one who kind of spilled the beans a little bit,
which he doesn't seem super. I mean, he didn't say anything about Amelia, but he's like, I really wish this hadn't got out because it was never something we were confirmed about.
Right. And I'm sure he was on like a big NDA, because remember he had that like Jimmy Fallon interview and he like didn't really say a whole lot. And then we were thinking, remember there was that convention after House of the Dragon season one, which he was there. It was like a big kind of Westeros convention. And we were thinking they're going to announce it, they're going to do something, and nothing came of it. And now it seems like it's shelved. But it does seem very interesting, because now it totally changes the whole narrative about this show. Because it very much has always been that the way it's been presented to us by George and everybody, at least the way they've talked about it a little bit. Now you look at the timeline, where I believe George said something along the lines of, and I can try to pull up the blog post when I post this on YouTube or whatever, but something of like Kit is working on it, as in like we assumed as fans, oh, Kit was the one creating this. Because remember, it was tied to another post that George Martin had made that was like, oh, there's other shows in development. Remember, this was like during COVID. And so one of those things we didn't know at the time was Snow. And so that was kind of like the timeline of this whole thing. But now it's like, oh, HBO went to him and said, hey, we want to do basically a season 9, or we want to do a Snow show.
Yeah. So
that's
a
game changer for this whole thing.
I think the way I'm deciphering this, I'm stumbling over my words, is that HBO most likely had this idea, reached out to Kit Harington. He said he was initially not interested, and then he started to think about it more. My guess is he said, I will agree to think about this as long as I have creative control over the genre. Like, it sounds like he wanted more input, and then he went back to the drawing board and it ended up not panning out. I bet you George was not approached until after they got Kit Harington to agree.
Right. To say, hey, Kit's on board.
And then George looks at it and says, oh, like they told him, hey, Kit's working on something. You know what I mean?
Right.
And then George saw it that way.
If you remember when when we look at the timeline, remember George was in he was somewhere and he ran into Gwendolyn Christie, who played Brienne of Tarth.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, I think it was for like maybe a Sandman thing or something, because she was in that. But there's like a picture of him and her standing next to each other. And around that same time, she had said something along the lines of an interview of like, oh, I would love to play Brienne of Tarth again.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe like we don't know if she was approached to be like, you know, hey, we're trying to get some people who would be interested in coming back to this. I'm still totally, I mean, on one hand, kudos to Kit Harington, because if they came to him and they like, we want to do this, and he reads it and he's like, this is just a cash grab and it's going to suck, then by all means, push it back. Because if you look at a lot of projects that have taken a long time to get done, like I'd much rather wait for something. I mean, like Top Gun Maverick, for example, right? I mean, that movie had been in development for like 30 years. Hey, we want to do a sequel to Top Gun, and kept doing it and kept pushing it and stuff. And Tom Cruise was like, well, it never felt right. And then it finally did. And it was freaking amazing. And it's like one of the best movies ever made. So, you know, you can wait and then you can do it. So yeah, I mean, will we see Snow? Probably. Seems like right now he's kind of busy with industry. He was.
I don't think so. I don't think it's ever gonna happen.
Oh, I think we will.
I don't think so. I think also the way he said,
I still think we will.
I don't really want it all that much now.
I do want it.
I know. I think also in a way he said in a limited way is probably hinting at the my guess of it being more of a character driven show of just John and his after Westeros life. I think that was probably what it was supposed to be. But I don't know. I don't know. It seems like he's basically saying that there wasn't enough there. And I don't know. He seems very wishy-washy with his relationship with the show. And I'm fine with that. Like, I don't hold it against him, but.
Well, it's such a big part of his life. I mean, you look at a lot of people. I mean, you know, a lot of the Harry Potter actors really haven't done much outside of that because they were all kid actors. So it's a little different, but he's, I mean, in a way he started when he was young. I mean, it took a long time, like 10 years to do all this stuff. So, I mean, that's long
16 when he started.
Yeah, I mean, even if you look at some of like Marvel actors, right. I mean, it's like, man, like, Chris Evans, who plays Captain America, he's done interviews before. He's just like, I mean, you sign up for like years and years worth of stuff.
Yeah, I also loved in that interview. He was like, I'm not going to pretend like Marvel was some like artistic change of pace or something. When Marvel calls, you answer the phone and you take the job. That's what he said. Basically,
I know. But now he was supposed to be part of Blade, and that movie has had like 18 different directors.
Yeah, it ain't happening.
I don't think it's gonna happen, which is crazy. How could you not? I don't know.
I mean, as long as Kit's been smart with his money, him and Ygritte should be just fine. So, hopefully he's doing well. And his family's happy. I know he has some kids and stuff. And he was talking about how awkward it'd be for his kids to watch Game of Thrones. And I'm like, yeah, probably not let them do that until they're 18. Probably be a good idea. Yeah.
Okay, one other thing I want to pull up here, and this just ties back into some of that Warner Brothers stuff, and then we'll get to our review here, is, and again, Twitter, the way they do this, when you click on it, it takes you all the way over here. It's so dumb now. But Warner Brothers wants to license out its intellectual properties to other studios, saying we have 11 studios here. We have a lot of IP. There's a lot of interest among others in coming to take advantage of some of that IP for gaming, which we're looking at. Now, this is... Jimmy and I have talked about this. We want a big Game of Thrones RPG. I think everybody does, whether it's like, you know, like a Skyrim type thing or Dragon's Age or whatever. But Warner Brothers has been doing a lot of this lately, actually licensing out their intellectual property to other people.
Yeah.
And maybe that's something they do with some of these Westeros shows that are in development.
I mean, too. Do you remember this? I mean,
not only video games, which, by the way, please, dear God, just give it to like From Software.
Anyone.
I mean,
I don't need another mobile game.
No, not another mobile game. Not like an MMO.
Do I play the Game of Thrones slots video game? Yeah. Do I want to? Not really.
I mean, even give it to like EA, you know, I'm sure they would make a decent game of, Star Wars, Jedi Survivor and Fallen Order were both really good.
There's a chance it could be good. I'll give you that. There's a chance. But this is interesting to talk about because do you remember, Matt, about like, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 months ago, me and you were talking about like, don't be surprised if you end up seeing a Westeros show on Netflix.
Yeah. Well, if you know, what's interesting is right now, Batman Caped Crusader is an animated Batman show that is not on Max. Because they were like, hey, we're going to license out this thing. And it's freaking fantastic. And nope, licensed out. I think they're going to end up doing the same thing. I think they're going to have to license out a lot of their stuff.
I'm going to be honest. I think that would be the most pessimistic for me is like HBO giving, you know what I mean? Like I want HBO to handle this. Like I don't want to see.
I think Netflix presents animated. I think we could see some of the. I don't know. I would be okay with Netflix creating an animated Game of Thrones thing.
They do
only
do
because there. I watched the Witcher prequel animated thing that they did, and that was pretty sick. So I would totally be down.
Castlevania was amazing. I mean, they've had a lot of good stuff. I'm not saying that, but there's something about it being under the HBO banner that has always made me feel comfortable.
Yeah.
If I start seeing like
now, if they license out a live action. Whoa. Show and again right now they're talking about video games, but they have been doing other things as well, other intellectual properties.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to see. It seems like Warner Brothers is completely out of their minds. So who knows what, where or what will end up on another network. We don't know.
Yeah.
We just don't know. I think it's a mistake personally, because it is literally their premier IP. Like, why would you do that? But whatever.
I don't know.
We don't have control over Matt, so there's no reason to stress out about it, right? We just
I have no control over it anymore. So no longer a shareholder. So all right. Let's dive into our and maybe I'll split this up into two episodes, since we did talk a lot about news here. And then we can just have the review be its own thing. But let's dive into our House of the Dragon season two review. And I have some Ravens, maybe I'll pull up to some people's thoughts. Interesting, by the way, because on YouTube, it feels like some people were a lot more negative. On TikTok, people were overwhelmingly positive about the season. So it's kind of hard to gauge people. We, of course, have our YouTube polls. And, you know, we typically go off of that because that's you guys directly voting. And over the course of the season, everybody was still pretty positive. I would say that the finale episode was the, I believe, is the lowest rated episode we have of any episode in our season. Mm-hmm. But again, I still stand by what I said. I liked the episode as a standalone episode, but I certainly get people being upset with it as a season finale.
Yeah, I didn't have as much problem with it as the finale, but like, we can't deny that it was probably supposed to be an episode 8 of 10, is what it is kind of thing. They made the best of it. And for me, it's also just certainly not nearly as terrible as it seems to be online. It's interesting the different platforms promote different things. Like, I hear a lot of positive things on the TikTok side of things, like as far as the social interaction goes. And then obviously Twitter, Reddit, YouTube tends to be a little bit more negative, though YouTube can have its nuances every now and then, but it just depends. So this season is a lot more polarizing than season one. I think that's safe to say. In some ways I like season two more than season one. And then some ways I like season one more than season two. I think if I took them pound for pound, I probably liked season one a little bit more. Though season
really?
Two. Yes, but I will say this. I think I like season two's pacing. Maybe not pacing is the word, but like, I like the fact that we were with one set of actors and actresses, and there was a ton of character development over that time. But looking back on season one, it's almost even more impressive because of the time jumps that they had to wrestle with, and they end up still making a very comprehensible like season of television and competent television. And there's a good chance that season one should have just absolutely fallen on its face with all the time jumps and character switching and whatever. So I think season one to me is, and also let's be honest, season one had way more writing on it. If it was even remotely bad, we were screwed. So I think season one to me is still maybe a bit more impressive, but I overall love the acting, character development and everything else in season two just a little bit more. So I don't know. I love both, Matt. It's like an 8.9 versus a 9 for me or something like that. Like, it's so razor close. I loved both seasons.
Yeah. I prefer season two, even though I think, you know, I mean, I agree with you. I think they're pretty close. They both do things well and they both do things not so well. I think the time jumps, you know, especially now seeing a season two where it's like, wow, look at how good it is. Where it's just start to finish, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, they were trying to adapt the source material the way it was, so that's not like they were like, hey, we're gonna do all these time jumps. I mean, yeah. They were, it's the source material you're adapting calls for that, so I don't really discredit them there, but just as a viewer, I obviously prefer a more straightforward narrative than the time jumps and the different actors and actresses. Mm-hmm. Of course, season two didn't really have much Viserys, although we get a little. So that helped.
That's a huge void that I felt. I'm not going to lie to you guys. Like,
yeah,
Viserys was probably the standout for me in the show. And it is what it is. Like, you can't just keep him around because he's great, right? So it is what it is. But I do think that shadow did have a little, it overcast it, you know? I don't know if we got that Viserys level performance that we did in episode 8 of season 1, the walk. I don't know if we ever got to that level for me.
Yeah, season 1 was also very much more political, whereas season 2 was very much more like prophetic. I was really not expecting that. Where season 2 was a little more way way heavier into that. So yeah, so for me, I'll start with, let me give the negatives for season two, and then I'll give my positives, then I'll talk back to you. And I think that's kind of a good way for us to do this,
Jay. Sure.
Okay, so I'll start with the negatives, because we get a lot of people commenting and be like, you guys are just stands, and you guys, there's nothing you dislike. But I don't know, during season eight of Game of Thrones, during season eight of Game of Thrones, we literally have reviews on iTunes that are like, you guys are too favorable of it and you guys are too critical of it. So I don't know,
we've been cursed with that for a long time.
Yeah, it is what it is. So the negatives, mm-hmm. I think even after I've seen it all, I still am a little irked by Blood and Cheese not having like the choice. I get why they did it, and I get, and obviously I think they did a very good job of taking it and adapting it in a way that makes it for the greens, right? Where mm-hmm. you can now shift the story and focus on like, oh, this is our mess up. So the aftermath of Blood and Cheese went in a direction I was not expecting whatsoever, and I actually loved that.
Yeah,
I am still a little I'm still a little irked they didn't have like the choice, because I felt like that was a big part of it. And you know, not having that other kid does create some interesting dynamics, but I still like the moment itself. Still a little, there's still just a little bit of me that's like, I felt like you still could have maybe had it and done something different. But regardless, I did ultimately actually end up liking the aftermath of it and the new things that it caused by not having the other kid there. Some other negatives. I think Corlys Velaryon was totally lost this season. I mean, like the final conversation we got with him and Adam was great, but I felt like he was basically not in this season whatsoever. I think Rhaenys' death didn't have the weight it should have had and the impact. It sort of felt like they just moved on from it pretty fast. And I will agree with some people. I do think we needed like maybe a little, some sort of action there at the end, right? Especially since we kind of thought we were going to get some in the second to last episode with all the dragons landing. We're like, okay, this is about to get sweet. Now, I still, again, liked the final episode as a standalone episode, but I do agree as a season finale, it's a little tough, even though I still think in the future, when I go back and binge this, I'll like love this episode and I'll still be clicking next as quickly as I possibly can. So even like my negatives of this season are things that are like, well, I kind of see why they did it. Oh, oh, oh,
O'Reilly. You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people. Oh, 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 O'Reilly
Auto Parts. And I do it, and I get it, you know, because I always want to see the whole picture. But I definitely agree with some people that, yeah, as a season finale, that's a little tough to swallow, because you're hoping for something kind of cool, only because it felt like if there had been another big like battle or something that had taken place in between episodes 4 and 8, then it wouldn't have made like everyone just getting ready for war at the end not feel as like, all right, now we have to wait again. So I'm kind of there. As far as other negatives, before I get to my positives, I still need to see more of Rhaena to see what's going on there, to be like, are they just cutting nettles out? Right. Mm-hmm. I still need to like see a little bit more of that, because I'm kind of on the fence, because there's a piece of it, and I don't want to go into spoilers here, of the nettles thing that I think is like a pretty important piece, that if they cut that out, then I'm going to need to see how they do it, or I may end up really not liking it. But right now I'm kind of like, it might be okay. So I don't really know about that, whether or not that's going to be something that I'm actually cool or not with the nettles thing. But The only other negative I can really think of, and I've been just trying to piece this all together a week, and I kind of wanted to do it just on the fly, so because I felt like if I really dive deep and dissect things, then it's not really my view on it and how I actually view it. So the only other thing is I felt like there wasn't enough Aemond in the first couple episodes. There should have been a little more Aemond. And I feel like they really need to figure something out with Allison. Otherwise, she's going to be kind of like totally lost as a character, and her screen time will feel almost like Baelish like in season 7, where they're like, we don't really know what to do with Baelish. So, okay. So those are my negatives. Positives. Obviously, all the rainy stuff was freaking sweet. Episode 4 was phenomenal. So epic. Absolutely loved that moment. Loved the fallout of Blood and Cheese because it gave the Greens more context. Actually, I'll say the Greens are probably the best part of this whole season in that they totally took the story in directions I didn't think would go because, as we've talked before, it's like an outline. Right. So you don't have all this context for them. And honestly, to me, the star of this whole season is Aegon. I wasn't expecting Aegon to go nearly the direction they went with him. And it makes him so big. Now, every time I see him on screen, I'm like locked in. Yeah. Whereas the book kind of makes it like, well, he's not like another like tyrant like Joffrey, but he's just like, you just kind of don't like him and, you know, whatever. So I think Aegon's like surprise star of this whole season. So yeah, I mean, I really liked this season. I thought the Cargill stuff with the brothers was awesome. Kristen Cole's conversation with Allison's brother was great. I thought Kristen Cole was an amazing villain. I mean, like, we were talking about how much like he might be the worst villain ever, like when he's like
and then a direct change into someone who has seen some awful things and it really affected him, which we both liked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, and I've talked before. So overall, I really like the season. I'm at like a 4 out of 5 for me. So it's a 4 out of 5 for a season. Thought it was great. I had some negatives, have obviously a lot more positives, but yeah, I mean, overall, I really liked it, but I would say those are like the standout things aside from it just being a, you know, the classic HBO amazing show.
Yeah. I mean, before I begin, I just want to say there's so many things that we take for, you know, take for granted when it comes to an HBO show, the score, cinematography, costume, these things that so many other shows do not land on and do not fit. So all of that, like that gets completely ignored whenever it comes to online critiques that I see that I find to be a little bit more low effort. But when it comes to negatives, there's some stuff I agree with you on. And then there's some differences as well. One of the number one things I thought of throughout the entire season, and I started mentioning it more and more as we went on, is Corlys Velaryon. Not his performance, not the scenes that we got weren't that, not that they weren't good, but a lot of them felt a little quick. And I think that the final conversation season really helped a lot with me. And I was just like, man, knowing that Steve Tucson is capable of this, and the Allen actor was amazing. Like, why didn't we get more of this before? I know you got to build it up, but so many times we cut to a 1 minute scene at a shipyard, and
I don't want to cut you off here. But do you think Corlys is the thing that got cut? Now that we're looking at this and we're like, they had to cut stuff and stuff like that, it seems like it literally seems like all of his scenes were filmed in like one day.
Well, that's my biggest negative of the season is resources being cut. It was a resource issue. The reason why they couldn't do a battle at the end of the season, and then they lost the 2 episodes. And I was about to say, I think there's a lot of seafaring stuff that was not included. And pretty much every single Corlys scene, almost every single one, happens at the same exact shipyard, same exact place, looks like the exact same day. And it's very obvious when you think about it in totality of all the scenes combined together. Not saying that there weren't other ones. Obviously, he had different characters and stuff. But with his sons, those might have all been shot in the same day. And I think you can feel that, which is a shame.
How much screen time? I mean, because I broke down the numbers real quick. And I'm sorry to keep interrupting on your point here, Jimmy. But just to add on to this, because I broke down the total screen time. And this, because of the extra length of episodes, it actually still is about roughly the same as a 10-episode season, like minutes-wise. But total screen time of Corlys Velaryon this season, Do you think it's even 30 minutes?
Oh,
for
no.
an entire season?
No, I think it's probably less than 20 to 25 minutes. We could look, we could find out. And it's not so much the runtime difference, it's the resource difference. Like that is, you only get so much, you know what I mean?
I mean, it's literally like, all right, we're going to do camera A with Corliss. Okay, now we're going to do camera B with Corliss. All right, now let's do camera C, you know?
Which is a shame, because I love his character. I love what they're doing with him. And, you know, him and Rhaenys, I wanted a little bit more fallout, even though we did end up getting the amazing scene with his daughter, which was excellent. So there's something to be said about maybe feeling a little stretched out, which is also another negative, right? The internal pacing to each of the episodes felt varied every single week. And that's not always a bad thing. Like, you want to keep things fresh and switch things up. And I know there's different people directing and writing, and that's just like the nature of this television game that we play. However, it did at times feel like sometimes you're watching like a different show week to week. And I don't mean like the quality was so much different, but just like sometimes the vibes were a little bit not off, but varying in ways that I didn't expect. So that would probably be my other negative, is just like there were times in the season where I felt like we were cutting so fast to different things, instead of maybe sitting in a scene for 10 to 15 minutes and then having, you know, maybe a 5-minute scene and then cutting back or something like that. And maybe we could have found a way to structure this differently. And this brings me into my final negative, and this is the one that no one's going to agree with me on. I think they should have changed more from Fire and Blood. I think that there is an opportunity to rework things, to switch around scenes and character arcs. I think they actually could do more. Now, there's going to be some people who didn't enjoy the season who think it's all character assassination and the book is perfect and blah, 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 blah. Those people are going to say, oh, they changed plenty. But what I'm saying is that because this show was so centered around Rhaenyra and Allison, I think that following so closely to the timeline for the most part is actually maybe going to be a bit of a detriment. And that if we're going to play out character arcs, as far as like what happens bullet point wise, maybe some of those things should be changed or switched around. So I actually think that a lot of the changes in the show, for a positive, I think a lot of the changes are actually pretty good, but I think they may have needed more. And I think we're going to see changes with Allison's storyline. And I think that we could have possibly made 8 episodes work. I don't think they even had time, though. I think the scripts are written. They scrambled to rewrite to make the kind of button it up at episode 8 instead of episode 10. But who's to say that we don't change a little bit and Rook's Rest gets scaled down just a little bit, and then we have some sort of mid-sized skirmish. Like, bring something up is what I'm trying to say. Mix up the timeline for the show. So there's almost some part of me that feels like they're struggling to stay loyal to Fire and Blood in the George R. R. Martin's lore, while also attempting to do things in a manner that is going to pay off for the visual medium, which is very, very different. Now, they are messing with the lore a little bit, and obviously George is a little pissed off about it. You can tell if you go to Not a Vlog, I think it's obvious that he's at least annoyed by some of the changes. But I think that there's opportunities to change more, and maybe it could have made it a smoother episode, a season. Now, that is very easy for me to say without being a writer and doing these things. So that's probably my last negative. That I can think of. A little bit of fast time travel stuff that we saw in seasons 7 and 8, but it's television. I'm not nearly as hardcore about that stuff as some other people are. That probably is it for that. Now, positives. I really enjoyed being with the same cast all season long. I think that there are very evident character arcs, though some of them are circular. And that is okay. That is a valid character arc, by the way. I saw a lot of people saying that Daemon kneeled at the end of season 1 and beginning of season 2. And at the end, he ends up kneeling again. And we're supposed to be amazed. And it's like, well, the kneel from the beginning of the season, the kneeling of the end of the season are very different. And he is a different person because of that. So that plays into one of my biggest positives is the embracement of prophecy and fantastical elements and calling back to a lot of the stuff that makes this fantasy show, which I happen to be a pretty big fan of. So I love that. The score, phenomenal. Huge plus. Huge, huge, huge plus. And I also think that for the challenge of what they had with the limited episode, limited resources, and a ton of actors and actresses to get through, I thought that they did their very best to give everyone a moment to shine. Biggest positive of the season is, surprisingly, the Greens. So I agree with you, Matt. I think Aegon is my standout for this season. I think he was amazing. And I actually loved Aemon and how much nonverbal storytelling and character development they did with him, with simple shots of him interacting with other characters without saying very much. And I think that that is part of the art of filmmaking or storytelling. And they did a really nice job of that. So that's kind of how I feel. I also thought that thematically this season was phenomenal. And maybe we'll have an episode where we break down some of the big themes and kind of like micro plots of the season. The twin small brothers, small folk, twin brothers, sacrifice. There's a lot of there. Also, I would argue to say even a little bit of like mysticism / religious themes.
All the stuff with Helena was awesome.
Helena is definitely going to be one of the big positives here. So I liked a lot of this stuff. And maybe people would disagree with me that, you know, one of my positives is the changes. Some of the changes were really good. I liked them quite a bit. So that's kind of my thing. I want to ask you this, Matt, though, kind of moving into this next section of this recap. Your outstanding performance of the season, would it go to Aegon as your number one?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Me too. Specifically him and Laris. Him and Laris on screen together added so much to those two characters. It was absolutely ridiculous. I loved it. Most underrated? Or maybe most like, you know, secondary, I would say Helena. I thought Helena did a great job here too.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I saw some people saying they're assassinating Helena's character. And I'm like, what are you?
What character?
There is like, what character in the book? I got a copy of Fireblood right over there. Oh, you know, just point to me exactly where they're assassinating.
I love Fireblood. People need to be realistic about this. I mean, it's an outline.
It's an outline. It's not. Yeah. I mean, yes, you want to say they're assassinating Daemon's character. Okay. I could see an argument for that, but Helena's what character? Please point it out to me. I would love to see it.
Yeah, I think Helena has been phenomenal.
I mean, if anything, I wish we got more of her, yeah. Right? I mean, she's every time something you got to pay attention to, and it seems like there's this opposing mysticism, right? We saw a green man.
Dude, how about that? We just jumped out of the forest. Really, it's green man. So that's another thing.
Yeah, even more insane, crazy. All the Harrenhal stuff, I get it. Yeah, I mean, after a while, it's like, all right, man, God, I wish Daemon. It's like, that's the whole deal. It's like, I wish Daemon were out there doing something else, right?
It did.
Yeah. It just would have been even more cool if we had saw a big battle where Daemon's out there like roasting people at the end, and then it would make all the Harrenhal stuff feel that much more impactful and everything.
Yes, oh, they could have left him out of a couple episodes, which they're not going to do because Matt Smith's the most popular actor in the show by fan voting. And yeah. Two, you know, this is an example. They kind of, I mean, with him being in Harrenhal, not the prophecy stuff, that's following the book structure, right? They could have switched this. They could have had small skirmishes, him joining in one of the Riverlands kind of Civil War type moments. You know, like they could have changed things up, but instead they said, well, let's keep him in Harrenhal. What's the most interesting thing we can do while following him being there? And then they tied into all this lore stuff that personally I really liked.
Yeah. Yeah. I also saw for whatever reason they cut out Craig and Stark. And like just for some reason they just cut him out of that. I have no idea why they
pushed it into season 3 is what is.
Yeah, but there's somebody literally showed a green screen edit. It's like somebody in the editing team released it, and you can literally see Craig and Stark was in that scene walking. They said Craig and Stark was going to be in it, and then for whatever reason they cut him out.
You think it's from budget?
Maybe they're like, well, that's one more royalty we'll have to pay.
That's what
I mean. Literally, that might have been the reason.
I think they squeezed this for every penny they had. They were putting.
I think so too. And you and I talked about that. We said, why didn't they do, like, use footage. You show the Night King, and then you could show Daenerys.
And the CGI wasn't as sharp in the still frame.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of okay because it's like supposed to be kind of wonky or whatever. They actually did another Warner Brothers thing. They did the same thing in The Flash, and they said it was a directive choice. If you go watch the scene in the Flash movie that came out a couple years ago, and there's this scene where it's like he's doing he's running super fast, so everything, and it looks almost cartoonish and it's kind of weird, but they said it was a creative choice. But it's like, I don't know, are you sure it wasn't a budget choice? So yeah, I saw the leaks of that beforehand, and I had messaged you and I was like, dude, it looks awful. And then I saw it in fast pace, not at like a 240p resolution, you know,
right? Right,
like somebody's
right,
like, right.
And I was like, okay. Intended, right. That's how they intended you to see it. So,
yeah. So like Daenerys is actually like the White Walker general to me was like, I felt like you should have shown the Night King. Daenerys from the back being like a silhouette, I was totally fine with because it's like in this dream world.
We would love to see Emilia Clarke again, but whatever.
For sure. Yeah. But you may have to give her a royalty if you show the actual image her. And so maybe that's why that literally might be why they did some of those things. So yeah, just I mean, the final scene was still super epic anyway, with everyone like marching, getting ready to go to war. Like that was fine as a scene just on its own. But yeah, I agree with you. Like now that we're getting this news that, because, and I still stand by what I said and what I've said all season, which is if the directors made the choice to say, we want it to be 8 episodes, which is the way it was presented, by the way.
Only person that kind of did it was Sarah Hess. Sarah Hess said it was a company decision. We had nothing to say.
Right. But other people said, no, we want 8. Like we're going to do 8 longer episodes, which I am fine with. Cause like shows like The Mandalorian have done that where it's like, okay, this episode is going to be 47 minutes. This episode is going to be 23 minutes. Like not as much is happening in this episode. That's fine. And then you have an episode like it's an hour. Like if you go watch like The Mandalorian and some of those Star Wars shows, times are like all over the place for episodes.
Yeah.
And even Stranger Things did that in its last season. Stranger Things had one of its episodes is like a movie. It's like a 2-hour episode. Awesome. You know, if that's what you want to do, like I'm fine with you telling the story you need to tell. And if it's a shorter episode or if it's a longer episode, as long as like you're creatively like, this is the story I want to tell. That's cool. But now that we're getting in, it's like, oh no, it was budget stuff. Now it's like looking back, it's kind of like, okay, I can see where that stuff is. But we're going, when you're going week to week, it's hard to tell.
Yeah, I think here's what happened. I mean, and we know what happened, right? So they cut it and they said, okay, this is the stopping point. We're going to rewrite this episode 8 and kind of go towards this kind of hyped up ending. And what they did was they relied on what didn't cost them any more money. And that was letting the actors and actresses act. That final episode is just a lot of them acting. And I know it sounds weird, like James, they you know, they act every episode, but like they said, the spectacles are way ramped down and we need you to go out there and give a performance to make this episode last to get us into season 3. And for that, I like that. I like that a lot. And I thought they did a nice job.
Yeah. I mean, and we've talked about like people saying, oh, we needed more action. Right.
I guess, I don't know.
I mean, I guess it's just like for a lot of that is like, should action be specifically like a big battle? Can action be like two brothers fighting? Can action be, can action be running away from dragons while they're chasing you and then like hopping on a dragon and you flying? I mean, like that's kind of action packed. And then Aemon going to get Vhagar. Like, is it just scene pacing or is it literally like, I want soldiers cutting other soldiers in half? That's where I'm kind of like, I felt like there was action and there was pacing. Yes, I guess I do get the idea of like, it felt like at the end of season 1, it felt like, okay, we're getting ready to go to war. And now at the end of season 2, it also feels like we're getting ready to go to war. When you step back from it though, at the end of season 1, it's like Rhaenyra and Allison are like, all right, we're going to have to go to war. At the end of season 2, it's kind of like the whole realm is saying, all right, we got to go to war.
And the dragons are going to be used. That's the other thing. It's like, well, we want to use dragons. And now they're definitely going to use the dragons. And instead of being a means of which to keep people at bay, they are now encouraged to use those dragons. And that's kind of what we see in the last face-off. And I think what I've came to the conclusion with this action stuff that everyone always talks about, you're right. What is action? That's a very good question, Matt. What is, when people say nothing happened, I feel like that's a really loose way of throwing around criticism. I think it's lazy for the most part because like you can objectively say things happened, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, in the season dragon, one,
something happened.
In the season 1 finale, it's Vhagar and it's, you know, Aemon and Luke.
Yes.
But is that as cool as Daemon versus the crab feeder? No,
no, not at all. Not at all. But maybe it is. I don't know. I mean, it depends on who you're talking to, right? So
I think for everybody, it's different. I mean, there was a fight. What's Lannister fought the pirate person,
Tyroshi or whatever. Yeah.
Well, is she Tyroshi? I don't know.
Lannister, I can't remember if the Tyroshi or not, but Lannister also should get a credit for being a B character.
Well, no, the Tyroshi specifically have the blue hair, which, by the way, we got lore accurate Tyroshi
for the first time. Let's go.
Dario Naharis had two different actors and did not have blue hair in either of them.
I think it comes down to this, Matt. I think people come to this show for different reasons. And one of the great things about Game of Thrones is that it served a lot of people's needs. It served the lasers and fireballs, but it also served for people who love good drama. And then also people who love cinematic presentation and beautiful scores and well done shows and costuming. And it just is this show that did a lot of that. Season two of House of the Dragon definitely leaned away from spectacle at times into more of the drama driven dialogue, you know, presenting storytelling. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. I think it's in the DNA of Westeros to be like that. And this is very similar to what happened with the first three books of A Song of Ice and Fire. A lot of people think Storm of Swords is the best book that George has ever written. Fair enough. I would agree. It is a closing of the first arc of the series. And then you have a new arc beginning and a fallout with Feast for Crows and Dance of Dragons. And a lot of people say, George lost his way. But when Winds of Winter comes out and it wraps up that arc, those two books look a lot better in retrospect. And I think people just kind of lose sight of the full process of the story. And that's why me and you were saying, well, think about this from a full story perspective. And we had a couple comments on YouTube saying that we were full of copium if we're talking about the full story of the show rather than just the season, which I think is nonsense. I just feel as if there are people who come to this looking for that season 6, 7, and 8 action, maybe even season 4 and 5 at some point. And they're not necessarily interested in season 1, 2, and 3. I mean, how many people do you know, Matt, who watch Game of Thrones and they said, yeah, you just got to get through season 1 of Game of Thrones. It's a little slow. That used to be the big thing people said.
Sure.
Oh, you just got to get to the final episode. But when you go back and watch, you're like, dude, the first 9 episodes of or 8 episodes of Game of Thrones, season 1, are phenomenal. And yeah. I'm using air quotes, folks. I'm being sarcastic. Nothing happens in those first 8 episodes.
They literally just cut out a battle.
They cut out. There's only 2 battles in the first 3 seasons of Game of Thrones, right? I think it's 2 battles or first 4 seasons or something like that. So
I guess if you want to call like big battles, I mean, again, that's where it comes down to just small. Like, do people consider the Cargills thing? Just like question. For some people, is that enough? Because I'm down with that. If that's what you're,
I think
that's for action. Me, I view action as pacing.
Chases. Action is as big.
Know? It can be like, you know, in other movies, it can be a car chase. It doesn't have to be a.
It could be a conversation.
Yeah.
Think about it though. It could be a conversation, and I'll tell you what, Matt. You know, a conversation we didn't get in season 8 that people were pissed off about. Whenever John ends up telling everybody who he is and his family, he's just like, "I got something to tell you," and it cuts away, and be like, "What the hell?" You know, and it's like, "Yeah, that is." Action in a way, right? It's propelling the plot forward, and it's this big moment that we've been waiting for 10 years, and then we didn't get it, and that sucked. Uh-huh. So like sometimes, you know, you need more dialogue. So I guess what I'm saying is I think the reputation of the show has brought a lot of people in here to this to be the fires, lasers and fireballs and dragon show, and those people are very disappointed. And it seems like the bulk of the internet, that's what they're there for. And I shouldn't even say the bulk of the internet, a lot of the loud part of the internet. That's what they're coming here for. And that's not what House of the Dragon season 2 decided to go with. We'll see a lot more of that in season 3. They'll like season 3 more if they can stop the hate train. We'll see if they can admit when they're wrong. But I don't know. We'll have to see. Ryan Caldwell did say he's like, I know you guys wanted this. We're going to open up season 3 with one of the most absurd on-screen battles we've ever done in Westeros history. So I guess we'll have to see.
I'm excited too. I for me, I see it both ways. Like I think that we'll close out on this because we have a poll running on YouTube about it right now, and it's at 51%, 4 out of 5 stars, and it's still mostly positive. So
yeah, I'd give this season 4 out of 5. I think that's fair.
Yeah, 14% 5-star, 24% 3-star, 5% 2, 6% 1. So I mean, very overwhelmingly in the positive camp of the season. Some comments: 3.69 out of 5, 3 out of 5. I was 4 out of 5 until the finale. Then it dropped to 3 out of 5 when the episode ended. I felt like the season was planned to be 10, and then they said so. Say and looks like, and then sort of actually now, like, you know, we're getting reports that that's basically what happened. Go ahead.
I want to ask you something, and I'm kind of poking the bear here of the internet, but Do you think all these people who say this is worse than season 8 are going to watch season 3, Matt?
Yes. I do. 100%. Because we get comments on YouTube of people being like, wins is never going to happen. And it's like, then why do you keep watching all the videos when we update on anything that's mentioned?
Yeah, give up, guys. I don't even care anymore. Yeah, I mean, they leave comment on every video. But also, how many people said they weren't going to watch House of the Dragon because season 8 sucked, and then it ended up being the number one show on Max? You know, it's just, it kind of makes me, I don't know, makes me wonder about the thought process of people.
Yeah, so for me, ultimately, again, I'm at a 4 to 5 stars. I totally get the people's frustrations with the finale. And I even to some degree, I get people's frustrations with Damon, right? Yeah. And that it did feel like Damon, who was like the action star of season 1. I mean, even scenes where Vaymond is like, these children are bastards, he's a whore. And then Damon cuts his head off. Like, even something that small carries a lot of weight. And with Damon basically being in like a, you know, drunken sort of mystical, he's like literally drunk on whatever weirwood paste or something, right? That he's seeing all these visions and everything. So when you remove that element of it, I do think that causes a big shift. So I certainly get why people maybe didn't like that as much, because a lot of people are also casual viewers where they're not reading the books. And so they were expecting Matt Smith to be like, all right, I saw him in season 1. He's like murdering people stuff. Now there's a full blown war going on, and now he's just hanging out in this castle.
Yeah. I think Rhaenyra's side in general was underwhelming this season when you compare him to the Greens, which is what you said.
Yeah.
The Greens were the all stars of this season. And I do think, and I will say, I think Emma Darcy's phenomenal performance, excellent always. But Rhaenyra was most interesting post episode 1, where almost no dialogue and Emma Darcy stole the show. Like, I just thought that performance was so good.
Oh yeah.
And I don't know, there's moments that are really, really good. However, I feel like I kind of expected a little bit more from the Rhaenyra character and then her side in general. So, if there's a criticism I can make, is that I can understand how somebody might find that the Rhaenyra side of things was a little bit underwhelming.
Yeah. And I agree. So I get people's criticisms for it, and I agree. And, you know, I agree with some of them. We have things we like, things we didn't like. It's a TV show, guys. Some people are going to like something. Some people really loved it. They're like, I loved every second of it. Some people
not the best or the worst.
Some people are like, I thought it was awful. I mean, I can guarantee you it's better than some of the other shows I've been watching this year, like The Acolyte. I have yet to watch a show this year that I thought The Bear was going to be like really good, and The Bear is kind of mediocre this year too. So
yeah, it's an up and down experience, and we're always going to try to be, you know, nuanced and look at, me and Matt don't even always agree on stuff, and guess what, we're fine, like we're cool. I think this is something
you and I very much disagreed on the Alicent Rhaenyra first conversation.
Yes,
you're like, I didn't like it.
And I still like the episode. Remember, I was like, yeah, but there's so much good in this episode. And I like the conversation. Yeah. And people are like, no, you need to, like, you know, stick with it, hate it. And I'm like, I don't hate it. I would tell you if I hated it. Here's the thing. And maybe this is a good reflection point, because I had this conversation myself at one point whenever, you know, I started reviewing books and stuff. If you find that your critiques are generally worst, like disaster or masterpiece, right? Best or worst, always. You're most likely lacking in your ability to analyze whatever you're consuming, whether it be books or, you know, TV or art or whatever it is. There's usually way more grayness to things. And, you know, also considering other people's perspectives, I don't think it's a terrible thing. And I don't mean that, you know, you have to like everything or you have to hate everything, but generally when it comes to like masterpiece or disaster being every single thing that you consume, you're probably lacking a little bit in your analytical ability. So that's just, I had to come to that at some point. You know, when I was reviewing books all the time, I noticed I said a lot of 5 stars and a lot of 1 stars. And I said, you know, that's probably not likely that most books are 5 or 1 star. There's probably a lot of 3 stars in there, a lot of 2 stars, a lot of 4 stars.
It's also based upon the scale you do. You know, a lot of people like to do out of 10. I don't. Because for me, I have a really difficult time not viewing a 10 scale as like a grade. And then I'm like, well, then like half, then I'm like, then 7, you know, then essentially 59% is an F. And it's like, I don't know that everything is an F. But sometimes I don't want to give something a 7 because I feel like it's a C, and I feel like I'm giving everything a 6 or a 7.
Yeah.
And then I feel like I'm not using this whole other scale. So that's why I like to do out of 5 for me, which is like amazing, great, good, you know, mid and trash.
And ultimately, you know, ratings are fun.
There's the 2 being mid or okay. And like, yes. You know, and then
here's the thing.
Or even bad. You know, I mean, it's like,
The way you talk about things and the way you formulate your feelings and your thoughts of something matter a lot more than a star rating or a number rating. You know, you got to be able to kind of like get to a place in your mind where you feel like you're relaying exactly what your experience was. And I think me and you have done a lot of work on that. And I think season 2, we've been better than we were in season 1. And that's why our episodes, we get both comments, you know, hey, you're too positive. Yeah. Hey, you're too negative. Well, but that's okay.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you. So Teresa and I just went and saw Twisters, which
how was it?
I walked out of Twisters, and you know, I'm somebody who like I'm looking at like cinematography and like I'm like understanding all of the references to the original one and like all of these things. And also I'm like, did I just have a good time? I walked out of Twisters. I'm like, dude, this might be 4 to 5 stars. Teresa's like, that was a 3-star movie. Like, just is what it is. And I was like, I don't know, man. They quite literally, the first half of the movie is designed in a way to set up a pun in the middle of the movie that is quite literally, this ain't my first rodeo pun. And I was like, the expert level of craftsmanship it would take to design an entire movie. No, it was fun. I had a ton of fun with Twisters. Anytime something can do anytime you have one of these sequel movies where they, you know, like, hey, we're gonna do the thing, but they don't force it down your throat to be like, hey, look, we like did the thing from the original. So they did a lot of like paid homage to like shots from the original and stuff like that, but they didn't like cram it in your face to be like, look how obvious it is we're saying or doing the thing. So I always really appreciate that. I mean, it's just a good, you know, it's just fun. It was just a good movie. But I do feel like, hey, it deserves some extra points. I mean, I can't give it a 5 out of 5. It's not, you know, that good, but it's certainly a 4 out of 5. But as an experience, I was like, I had total fun. It was a 5 out of 5 experience. But
yeah, and maybe that's an example of something that's just a lot of fun, good time, kind of, you know, popcorn watch, and you want to give it a 4 out of 5 or 3 out of 5, right? But then if you give a Game of Thrones episode 3 out of 5, it feels like you expected it to be 5 out of 5. You know what I'm saying? Like, right. And that's where ratings and stuff are so hard.
And that's where I talked too about this last week's episode, where this last week's episode is getting like, you know, really low reviews. But I feel like in the future, when people are watching this and you're experiencing it in a different concept, like the experience of the finale of waiting the whole, you know, like 2 years to get the season and going into it with the expectations that we just saw all these people get dragons and now it's like we're gonna have a battle, and then you don't see any of that stuff. Yeah, the experience of that is rightfully, like, for a lot of people, a 3 to 2 star experience.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I'm like, I get it. But as a standalone episode, when you watch this in the context of a couple of years where people are going to be watching it for the first time, just binging the whole thing through, yeah, I think people will watch this last episode and be like, oh, that was a freaking great episode.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, and both experiences are valid. You know, we're not
because we're seeing that with Game of Thrones too, where it seems like now the same thing happened with the Star Wars prequels. Is when they first came out, all the old people were like, oh, these suck. And now it's like the people are like, oh no, the prequels are really good. And the internet has almost turned Revenge of the Sith into the best Star Wars movie.
And it's also, there's a lot of nostalgia driven in that, right? Yeah. People that are getting older, that was what they grew up with, instead of the people who grew up with it in the 70s. I mean, there's so many human factors to add into experiences.
If the next season of House of the Dragon is like god awful, like let's just say it's like a 1 star, I mean like complete and utter trash, we may look, I mean some people are already saying it. So there are some people right now already saying that, oh, like this makes season 8 look great. It's like, well, so season 8 isn't as bad as you think then, is it? You know what I mean? Like that's the
But you know, for people who experience it in the time, they'll remember that their whole lives, and that level of disappointment and whatnot.
Yeah,
but,
so it's different. So it's all subjective, you know.
It all is subjective, and I think that it would just, you know, sometimes the sky isn't falling. And sometimes it's okay to be like, yeah, I liked most of it. There's some stuff I really didn't like. Season three, let's see what happens. I think that's where me and you were at, right? Like, I'm very excited. Oh, yeah.
I feel confident in my, I gave it a 4 out of 5 on our poll. And that's what our fans and everybody here, people who watch our show and stuff are saying too. So that's about where I'm at. So I think that's a good place to leave it. So, yeah, we may come back and do some more talking about it, but yes, for a lot of people who are listening to us for the first time, let me just say this. What we do, Jimmy and I normally really do, is actually we're going through the books. So a lot of people are first. I never really read the main series of books, and we will be diving back into that shortly. We still have a little bit of more House of the Dragon season 2 content to get through, and then we'll be diving back into our reread of A Song of Ice and Fire. You can check out hundreds, quite literally hundreds of episodes of us breaking down the books, discussing the theories, going chapter by chapter. I mean, it literally goes back like 5 years. It's crazy. And maybe even longer than that. I don't even know how many years we've been doing it. So, but yes, we're continuing, and we'll be continuing that on probably in it's August, about September and October, until Dunkin' Egg comes out.
And maybe we'll even do some Dunkin' Egg episodes, like read the stories because they're so short.
We're definitely gonna have to do the Hedge Knight before. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So awesome. With that, remember, we do have a Patreon episode coming as well, and some other content and stuff we have planned for you guys. So with that, guys, as always, want to say thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. And leave us a vote on that poll so we can see what everyone else thinks. Because right now it seems like everyone's actually a little more in line with what we're thinking, Jimmy.
Yeah. It all evens out eventually.
It does. So with that, as always, guys, remember that winter is coming.